now for the fun stuff, we have Frank Bredig here, who does a lot of interesting things besides being a CISO, and will now talk to us about nerding out over silly machines, and I see he already brought some machines. Frank.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Welcome here. Nerding out is something that I like to do together. So if you're sitting in the back, that gives less opportunity, but the choice is yours. I'm Frank. I'm crisis manager at DIFD. I'm a CISO. If you want me to waste your time, talk to me about my old farmhouse, my kids, balloon folding, fire breathing, 1960s era DDR telex, it's actually there, or beekeeping. But now I'm going to talk about silly machines that I make, and I did not set out to make silly machines. Apparently it's just something that I happen to do every now and then. And I don't know where it actually came from, but my dad was a carpenter with lots of his friends in construction. My grandfather was an electrician that was always working around the house, putting things together, fixing bikes, fixing wood for his stove. So I'm used to people being able to make or fix stuff. And I have the misquoted Pippi Longhouse or the Pippi Longstocking syndrome that I've never done something, so I think I can. I don't scare easily. I'm officially trained as a store clerk, owner, an administrator, an IT guy, and then I got into security, so no training on engineering or stuff like that. And today I'd like to talk about four machines. One is the first, what I think was the first 3D color printer in the, maybe even in the world, and that was back in 1998-99. My certified aesthetic Harker, a Zen garden robot I built, Twitter, Telegram, Slack AI connected telex that I put together, and lastly the ASCII photo booth, which I also have here. Help me keep time a little bit or select the topic. If there's one that interesting you a little bit more than another, just shout out and I'll, if I'm boring you, let me know. So how did I get to do work on a color 3D laser printer? Well, it was actually a paid assignment, that one. I just graduated. I've got a Bachelor of Science in IT. And I was working for a company that was then called PTS Software, is now Alten, and they hired me out to TNO Industry to build something in, I think it was Visual Basic. Interestingly, that was 98 or 99-ish. I don't remember anymore. Way too long ago. Yes, I'm old. I did not build hardware. I just built what we would now call a slicer and the software that would actually drive the printer. So you could say a printer driver, although I think that would be cheating. And it was a deposit layer modeling with selective sinter. So what it did, it was a bucket, and then it would fill it with a small layer of dust. And on that layer of dust, it would sinter particles precisely together by putting a sticky fluid on it. And that sticky fluid would then make a layer, and then you would lower the table a little bit, spray a little bit more of the plastic sand on it, if you will, and then again repeat, and then layer by layer you would build that device. And then later we would impregnate that model, because it wasn't that sturdy, with a secret formula called cyanoacrylate, or commonly known as superglue. Just drip superglue on it, make it saturated, and then you got a nice hardened plastic model. It couldn't build big things. It was limited to about this size, and then it would take forever, so we usually printed out toy cars as the examples. And TNO Industries was a dangerous place to work, because they had the first deposit modelers, which printed out wax models, and then they had fusion deposit like the ones we have now, and they had paper layer printers, and my spot was way in the back, and I had to be careful not to take an hour to get from the entrance to the lab to my workspace because these machines are mesmerizing to look at. Ooh, it moves. Yep, another half hour wasted. So it's a selective sintering device, and it had a couple of things that it had to do really good, and it had to be able to deliver on an exact 2D location, and it needed to deliver multiple fluids, mainly red, yellow, and cyan, at precisely the right spot, and then a clear fluid. And luckily, there was already something that did that, and we repurposed, and whoever built the machine repurposed that. Anybody care to take a guess who doesn't know? Yes, you're right. Well, not an inkjet cartridge. We use an entire printer because it has the mechanisms to move, and you just need to put a little bit of a cartwheel on a cogwheel on the drum that moves the paper. That moves you back and forth. But it works really well. Now, 3D color laser printing, 3D color printing sounds easy, because if you have a cube, you just put different colors on it. This is me drawing a cube. I'm not an artist, clearly. So if you have a cube and the top is blue, and you have a red, a green, a yellow, a cyan, and a magenta side, easy, right? Well, the question becomes, how deep does the color need to go? Because if you cut off a little corner So if you would slice this in a corner, so it's triangles, STL files, so you get like two red triangles, two blue triangles, two green triangles. That's easy, but how deep does the color go? And if you take it from the top side, yeah, then clearly you need to go under a 45-degree angle, because, yeah, you can't just print red, because then you have little red sides on the yellow part. And if you just print yellow, you have little yellow sides on the red part. And it becomes even more complex when you cut it like that. So we had to come up with something to do that. And that was a very interesting challenge, to come up with some practical solutions for that. So one of the things we thought up early was, let's use voxels. So layers were about 0.25 millimeter thick. So if you had to print something that was 5 centimeters high, that's like 5,200 voxels. You had a lot of pixels. And this is the age of the Pentium 2, where a hefty machine had a gigabyte of memory, where you would put things in high memory with high memsys. So no, it was out. It was a good idea, but it was out. So anybody has any bright ideas how to do this? So what we come up with was, well, it's the STL files. All the models are printed in triangles. We still do that. If you have a 3D printer, you're familiar probably with STL files. and you have three coordinates for every triangle. So if you need to take a triangle and take that into a 3D type of model, what do you get? Not pyramids. Prismas or trapezoids. I think prisma is probably a better correct. So what we did was we calculated all the things, but it becomes a bit of a challenge, because you need that corner. So what we would do is, at any interaction point where two lines would meet, we would calculate the corners, then calculate the middle point of all that colors, because that's the inside. And along that line we moved, you got a little triangle on the inside. I can tell you, I dreamt of this stuff. And I had a colleague who was he was also sitting there, and then in the morning I would come in and it's like, listen, I was thinking last night, or I actually dreamt about this, and he got this smile, and then we got another idea, and we got to try it out for a week. And I'm now only telling you about the things that worked, but there were a lot of ones that didn't work. So invention is also inventing about ways things don't work. Unfortunately, I don't have the device. I can't find any documentation about it anymore online. I wasn't being able to talk about it for a couple of years because of contracts and stuff. So I'm going to move on to the next device, which unfortunately fell apart somewhere at some stage. But my employer wanted to create a new space in the house, and it was Lab 271. And the idea was to cut a hole in the roof and make an indoor patio with a Zen garden in it. And the idea was that we would rake the Zen garden. Now, I know us. We're functionally lazy. I think we would have raked it once or twice. So I thought, okay, let's see if somebody's already made a robot. And I actually found somebody who does it. He's published about it, but not how he did it. So it's like, yeah, listen, I can do that. And then they didn't trust me with the entire 5x5 space, so they know me as well. So I built a prototype to scale. Well, you can clearly see where the carpentry comes from. That's a bit of old flooring, actually. Put some machine in, put some poles up. Somebody pointed me to the fact that you've got like Arduinos and they have hats for stepper motors. admit, when I started doing this, I was clueless about steppers. So I was really happy when I finally got these to actually do a little motion at different speeds, and that was by design. I didn't know about micro-stepping back then. I learned. I made some spools out of paper, and then you know from sport games where you have the camera, and the camera is suspended on four lines at the cross of the stadium, and they can move nicely. That was the effect that I wanted to do, but then by making sand. And there was a lot of, so there is math involved. Unfortunately, if you hate math, don't build this. But it's pretty easy. It's all Pythagoras calculations. So it's all right angles, because you got a right angle like that, and you got a right angle like that. And then, yes, you're doing it in 3D, and then it turns out it works in 3D as well. Because it's not just that A square plus B square equals C square, but if you go into 3D, it's actually A square plus B square plus C square actually equals D square as well.
In order for the public participation.
Yeah.
There's
Is there somebody with a mic? Because I don't think you can be heard in the back.
Could you get, okay.
Yeah, maybe you've seen it before, but there's actually a CNC machine that works with the same principles that you put against the wall, and essentially it uses ropes to direct the placing of the actual cutter.
Yeah, it probably wasn't unique what I thought, but I hadn't seen that one.
It's brilliant. It's really nice.
I had seen the Delta printers, but they use rods, and rods are rigid, so you can push with it as well as pull. Ropes are a little bit less accurate. After some tinkering and learning how to program an Arduino, and then a training as a programmer comes in handy, I did actually got this to work, sort of. Isn't there a video here? No, there's no video in there. So at some point, it actually started to get some improvements, and this is a time-lapse video. And you can still see my machine open, running the debugging. So I got it to draw straight lines. So I took this one to Hacker Hotel. Turns out that Elher was giving trainings there to train people to become CEH, Certified Aesthetic Harker. So basically certified aesthetical raker, but also equipped to the other CEH certification. This robot, in the end, became CEH certified robot. This is a little bit later. So this is what micro-stepping, where micro-stepping became handy, and it became even smoother. And while doing this, I learned a few things. First one is that Arduino programming isn't hard once you understand the concept of being in the continuous loop. Timing is your friend, so use the counter, use the clock to count a millisecond. Because yeah, if you're sending something from there to there, it's not just like make the wires like there, because then you're gonna fly up and do heavy trajectories. Like I said, micro stepping is there for a reason. Going from A to B in n seconds doesn't mean device X, Y, and Z distance in n seconds. You really need to calculate every step of the way. Building something that works is easy. Building something that works reliably is really, really hard. So in the end, this project never got to be because they feared that I would have to stay at the company to just keep it maintained and keep it running. It had lots of maths, and like I said, Pythagoras does work in 3D as well. It was a fun machine to build. It was a fun prototype to build. I'm sorry, at some point somebody needed the stepper motors. At some point somebody needed the Arduino. At some point somebody got rid of the sand, and now it's in a sad state. There's a theme there. Yeah, and then the cause of a lot of back pain, literally. Is Telexes, and with the Telex project, I'm here presenting about it, but I'm actually standing on the shoulder of giants here, because I can't do electronics, and my colleague Patrick de Zoete helped with it. Then we need to debug prints, so Gert Kramer helped me. I needed to get this thing running, so. Yeah, at some point at MCH, I was sitting in our village trying to get this thing working, and somebody looks over my shoulder and goes, that's interesting. So it's the other way around. It's like, hey, are you familiar with this? And he's like, well, I used to be a teletype engineer, a service engineer. And it's like, can you please sit down and help me fix this? And he helped a lot. He had to go out, but he really helped me. Marut helped me out. Dens helped me out during Hacker Hotel, building the new breadboard version that's now, that's no longer in here because we got it on an experimentation print now. The software I got from FabLab Würzburg did a lot about it as well. The Pi is now being managed, and I just put it together and had crazy ideas. Probably there's some people here who are wondering what the heck is a Telex, actually. I don't blame you. I had to learn a lot about it as well, but it was one of the first ways to reliably communicate large amounts of information or large-ish amounts of information across long distances. You had the Morse code, but Morse code is cumbersome. You need two humans. Teletypes are basically electromechanical typewriters, and I'm doing it a little bit short maybe, but electromechanical typewriters that can transmit a 5-bit signal over long distances, and then once you have them hooked up together, basically anything you type here gets typed on the other typewriter as well. And it was one of the first ways to send messages digitally, even though they didn't know it was digital then. It was just power or no power. Also, different concepts, because this is electromechanical, the signal actually needs to carry energy across. Communication is 40 volts, 40 milliamps, and I know you know this, that's you can feel that. It doesn't hurt a lot, but it's you feel it. If you happen to hit it, it's like ow. So it's and how did I get to do Telex as well? That's the their fault and a colleague of mine's fault. He borrowed a Telex from Stichting NodeNet because we wanted an escape room in our office. And this is just a challenge. And then, they were awesome. We were very late bringing it back. I still feel sorry for that. And then we brought it to MCH, actually, on this same campground for the first time, and we had lots of fun with it. There was one in the info tent, one in our village, and I still have memories of playing a text-based adventure against another human in another tent. And we were giving him commands, and he was making up the field as we went along, and as alcohol levels got up, the game got a lot more fun and a lot less consistent, but it was a lot of fun. At that time, we were building our lab, and I want one of these two because I can't resist the kinetic nature of them. I mean, it's disconnected now, but if you connect this, you can hear this is like true. This is engine. This is what engineering sounds like. This one's louder than yours. it's really a beautiful piece of engineering. So I went on Marktplaats, obviously. I went to a farmer's shed in Drenthe, got this machine. It was caked under dust. I took it home. Like, what the heck? I plugged it in. Crap, it worked. They knew how to build stuff that lost back in the 60s. They didn't build in pre-built obsolescence. This thing is meant to last. So what does it do transmitting? How does it transmit energy? Well, it's got this 5-bit system. Sorry, me nerding out, but you were warned. It's 5-bit system, actually a predefined for the ASCII table. But if you have 5 bits, you can do a total of 2, 4, 8, 16, 32 combinations, which is a bit of a bummer if you're trying to transmit at least 26 letters, 10 digits, and then some punctuation marks. Crap, that's 36 and counting. So what they came up with a real good system is that they have mode shifts. And the mode shift means that it can either type letters or it can type numbers. And if you got it in the wrong mode, then your keys don't work. So at MCH, at some point, I found it back with a little note on it. Sorry, I pressed too hard. Good thing is you can fix these things. So we fixed it, brought it back. Like I said, 40-fold, 40 milliamp. This information is actually wrong. It is normally closed. So it's normally a running circuit. In idle state, it's constantly transmitting a one. So there's a constant current loop going through all the devices. It has 1.5 start bit, so that's a zero, when it knows, okay, if the line goes down for 1.5 bit, I need to start. And then it reads the 5 bits. So it means you actually need 7.5 bits per character. It can send a whopping 50 bits per second. For those of you that work with modems, if you thought 2400 baud was slow, this is slower. For the modern generation, it would take about a year for a TikTok movie to transmit at that rate. You can send about 32 characters, so that's why it's there. And it turns out, again, standing on the shoulders of giants, somebody had already built something to put a Pi, to connect a Pi to a Telex. Actually, the first computer terminals were teletypes. So if you're on Unix systems and you know, you've probably seen the def TTY coming by. So the TTY stands for teletype, which is the American word for telex. But I made some software modifications. I hooked it up to software. So at MCH, We had the device on stage at some point. We had people sending messages and actually had a Twitter API, and you could tweet to the Telex and get your message back. I was able to save all the paper that came out, print, scanned it with my phone, cut it in pieces, have the original Twitter message, links to the original Twitter message behind it. It's on mch2022telex.github.io. Yeah, you can see what kind of fun we had. Yeah, I'm not paying any... So Twitter API at some point wasn't free anymore. So it's like, okay, I need something else because, yeah, I'm not paying this person any money. So I wanted to plug in. Turns out that the PyTelex software works as a loop as well. So if you had Twitter and Slack at the same time enabled, because I built a Slack integration as well, then the Slack integration would tweet everything and the Twitter integration would Slack everything and it would become a quick mess. Also, we live in a very good, yeah, so this was also, so I loosely coupled it by making a TCP integration and now I can talk TCP, just telnet to the Telex, print a string and anything that gets received at that point, I get back through through a telnet interface. Works like a charm. If you have a modern phone and you have a slow-mo mode on your camera, it's actually awesome tool for debugging that stuff because even though it's only 50 times per second, it's still too short to see it. But if you actually fire up your slow-mo cam, then at some point it slows down and you can actually see the 5 bits coming by here at some point. Disadvantage of slow-mo video, do it long. But there they come. And you see that triggered the code and you saw a hammer get triggered there for a transmission. Slow-mo cameras, awesome tools. You can actually also see how the pickups work. So it works with the current signal by putting things through a magnet. It flips up these bits, and if there's power going through the magnet, it means this metal bit will stick to the coil. If there's no power, it will fall back. That's where the first signals get received, and then mechanically it gets transferred into the action of the hammer going against the paper. And you saw it going by, and that was in slow-mo. You wouldn't see that if you didn't have it on slow-mo video. Yeah, another bit where I was trying to debug the way the carriage moves. And it's the shifting mechanism here that I was trying to debug. So it's a bit out of focus, but I could still see something happen. Do it long. Yeah, and you could see it getting shifted in a different mode. So in the end, what I did up, I set up, it worked for a while, and what I set it up with, I set it up to talk to ChatGPT. In ChatGPT, I created a virtual character called Vern. F-E-R-N, because in German, a telex is called a Fernschreiber. Vern lives in, this is a DDR model, so Vern obviously is from East Germany, actually East Berlin. Sitting behind his telex, is very much aware that all his communication is being read, so that he shouldn't be too negative about socialism and the current regime. And Fern can actually explain what the demo is about, but doesn't know other modern concepts, the space war, etc. He's blissfully unaware. But you can ask him questions, and it's makes the demo magical because if you got the blinking red button and people press it, the machine comes alive, and then it's like, yeah, but what do I do now? Well, just say hi, and they say hi, they press carriage return and line feed. And then Fern comes back and says, Guten Tag, how can I help you? And it's a really funny, I've tested this with adults, I've tested this with kids, and then at some point they get it and they get a conversation going. So that's what I hope to get back to. Right now it's got mechanical difficulties. Was hoping to get to it, but yeah, camp happened in a different way than I predicted, which was not unexpected. So yeah, that's on the telex. Last one I want to go through is my ASCII photo booth. Bit of inspiration, we had a year party at DIVD, where I'm a volunteer, and our communication person wanted a photo booth there. You know, the modern kind with silly mustaches and party hats, and I have an opinion. And then Chris, our director, said, yeah, but I have this website where you can make an ASCII, turn a JPEG picture into ASCII art. And it's like, I can make that happen. And inspiration struck. I have the source code online. And it's that thing over there. So it's got a Flask application, cups for printing, a little access point, a Pi cam. Actually, the old Galaxy Tab tablet that's from my late mother that I had lying around and doing nothing. And a matrix printer that, again, Mark Platz is your friend. And yeah, what you can do is this one is live and working, sort of. Except that the battery sucks. Warn me if it's in a boot screen. So I built three Linux services, one that handles the HTTP side, one that handles the printing side, and the other one that handles emailing. Turns out that matrix printers can be expensive. There's an Oki shop selling this exact model for 750 or 889 euros. It's that model. Sorry? Ah, it's done. Great. Thank you. So I need to go to Chrome. Yeah, so I got a picture here. You click take picture. It counts down to from three. And then you click on print. And then it should start to print. And the demonstration effect hits again. OK, come by Area 42. I have a working model there. Damn it. The demonstration effect. I didn't offer anything to the demo god. That must be it. I guess it's in the queue. I'll figure it out. Confession, I'm in security. I had a data leak on this thing twice. First time I found out this is a web app, you have to tell the web browser not to cache email addresses that are put in. So people were seeing each other's email addresses. Second time, it turns out that if you do turn it off, then you need to turn it off in the tablet as well, because it tries to be handy and it's a personal device, so you are okay to. So I had turned it off there. Thanks, Tabita. You found it. I fixed it. Yeah, and that were the last of my slides. Hope I have not bored you to death. Hope you have lots of questions. I'm not sure how we are on time. Like 5-10 minutes, something like that.
You still have 10 minutes of the talk and then 5 minutes of Q&A, so 15 minutes.
Oh, okay. So any questions you have?
Does the 50 bar about have anything to do with 50 hertz of the...
Can you use the mic or...
That would be nice, but then also the people on the stream can hear.
I can repeat the question as well. Is there a relationship between 50 hertz and the 50 bots? Well, given that the American teletype system runs on 60 bots, yes, there's likely a relationship because you can do the timing on the net. probably to do with the rotary speed of the engine, the electromotor. So yes, there is a relationship.
Thank you for the talk. What's next?
What's next? I want to fix that thing because I had so much fun with it, and I specifically asked people to bring the other so that I can couple them together. But yeah,
I meant a new project.
About a new, I never planned them. They happened to me. So yeah, it'll be the next one. I don't know what the next one will be, to be honest. The next one was I actually built a more modern version of the ASCII photo booth. So I have instead of using the tablet, I use a touchscreen for the Pi, and I've got the browser running locally, so I don't have this stuff anymore. Loses a bit of its charm from it, but makes it a lot more reliable. And to compensate that, I've hooked it up to an older printer. It's an Epson LX 800, which has like a really shitty resolution. So yeah, I have to find the balance there a little bit. Yep. It's over there.
Yeah, there's a mic in the corridor.
Careful.
Sometimes with silly projects, we have a genius idea that we're like, oh, wow, that's incredible, that's going to solve all my problem. And it's only when we try to implement it that we realize, oh, actually, that's stupid and I'm forgetting some, I don't know, fundamental physics thing. What's the biggest, like, time where you had a slip-up like that, where you had a, aha, this will fix everything, but then you were kicking yourself for being so foolish afterwards?
Yeah, so what's the biggest problem that I thought I could solve and then couldn't overcome? Well, it's one of the problems I had that I fixed this camp was, so we had the LX 800, and what I couldn't get it to do was, so I could get it to print, but the last 400 bytes of my message got lost. And then if I printed the next one, it would start with the first line of that buffer, and then it was really horrible. And I took me about a day and a half, so that's the other, that's why I haven't got around to the Telex. And in the end, what I decided is I'm not going to bother. If it's not working the way it's supposed to, then, sorry, I guess it translates better than, als die gaat zoals het moet, dan moet het maar zoals het wel gaat. So if it doesn't go the way I want, it's supposed to, then I'm going to make it the way it is working, actually. So I built in a function to send commands before I send the page, which is clear buffer and reset yourself. And then after every print, I just send 400 bits of spaces, which it will not print anyway. And that way, I got the old print going out instead of what probably would have been the proper way is debugging the CUPS driver for an LX 800. But I decided that wasn't my problem. Maybe I'll put a ticket in for them. Yeah.
Sending regular resets is a very old programming technique.
Yeah, it you see it a lot. So
I was wondering, if you send the pictures to a website, wouldn't that might maybe be a data breach as well?
I'm not sending pictures to the website. So converting JPEGs to ASCII, there's actually a command line utility for that, JPEG2A. I just feed it into there, convert it to ASCII, okay. And then I throw it to the printer. It doesn't go to the website. It was just like, that was what my colleague had seen. And he's like, yeah, you can do this. And I'm like, yeah, boring, I know. But then it's like, oh, that gets me out of the photo booth, and I built this instead.
So you run that locally, but then...
Sorry?
You run that locally or something?
I run it locally. I run it on the Raspberry Pi. There's a Raspberry Pi in there, I just got to love these things. Easy, convenient, not too expensive. I wish I had them as a kid.
First of all, love the talk. All of those, everything you showed is super awesome. My question is, was there ever a time when you made a decision, whether that's a design or implementation decision or anything else, and then you came to regret it a lot later on, but it was too late to change things?
Yeah, the one classical one is the decision not to commit often and push my code a lot. So I did come into where it's like, no, it's not supposed to that way. You know what? I'm going to make a complete pivot. And then I guess it follows your line. You make a complete pivot. Turns out that, no, that's a bad idea as well. And you need to go back to your code. And then you find out that, gosh, I only actually had it on my machine and I overwrote it. So commit often, push often if you can. I can't think of other ones, but yeah, you have these moments where you go off on a tangent, you try to fix something and you just sink a lot of time in it, figuring out a way how not to do it. Okay.
Yeah, more questions.
Yeah, why isn't it working? But yeah. it annoys me.
Spend a few more minutes trying to debug it.
Yeah.
I mean, about your first Zen Garden project, did you see, at least I saw a couple of articles about people building this into their IKEA tables with a magnet from the other
side?
Yeah,
so the Sisyphus tables, you mean. Yeah, so
but of course that doesn't scale to 5 by 5 meters.
The problem with the Sisyphus table is that it's so it's another way to do this, but the thing is with the Sisyphus table is it requires you to have something under the Zen Garden. So this is something that's built on a concrete floor, and there wasn't any room under it, and I probably would have needed a very heavy magnet to get the ball through a layer that is supposed to be. So the gravel there is about this thick, so it's really supporting something. I did think of a rigid system, but I didn't like the aesthetics. So then you would have a really big beam that's running over this like a plotter, and I thought that wouldn't look nice, whereas if you use the wires, you can make them so thin or at least not as much in the way. So that's why I came up with the four cables in the end.
I mean, in a Japanese way, maybe you could have embraced the beam thing and made it like Japanese wood, really thick beams, like they do for their arches and stuff. But
could be
not
I'm
a
not
woodworker.
An artist. An RC car would have done it as well, but positioning an RC car precisely is then you need something with a camera and motion tracking. This would be one of those things where you go off and then you find out that. That thing you describe, yeah, it happens when you, because I usually do this in the evenings, and then that's where you somehow at 3 at night think, crap, I need to get out of bed at 6:30. Was this a good idea? No. Did I have fun? Yes. Did I have any results? No, damn it. yes. You've been there by the sound of it. So, yeah, lots and lots of fun.
Yeah, I think we've all been there, so thank you, Frank.
Thank you.